In chapter 3 of the Gita, Krishna emphasized on the path of karma yoga, the path of selfless actions. Then in chapter 4, he emphasized on the path of jnana yoga, the path of knowledge. Thus in chapter 5, he is summarizing both these two parts of karma yoga and jnana yoga, and how karma yoga leads to jnana yoga. And the reason for the summary is to introduce us to the topic of the next chapter, which is dhyana yoga or meditation. Therefore, the sadhana of a spiritual seeker is to start with karma yoga, go to jnana yoga, and culminate in jnana yoga or meditation. Therefore, the last few verses of chapter 5 will introduce, give you a brief introduction to meditation. And chapter 6, he will elaborate on the topic of meditation. And what we should also recall, that karma yoga and jnana yoga can be pursued in two ways. One is, we can renounce the world, renounce our possessions, our relations, and enter into an ashram life, become a sannyasi, and pursue karma yoga and jnana yoga. That is one possibility. However, Krishna says there is a second possibility, which means you can remain as a householder, as a grihastha, but you must pursue both karma yoga and jnana yoga. Hence, there are two lifestyles which are prescribed in the scriptures. And Krishna has summarized both these parts in chapter 5. In verses 10, 11 and 12 of chapter 5, he summarized the karma yoga sadhana. And in verses 13 to 21, he will summarize the jnana yoga sadhana, out of which we have covered up to verse number 17 last week. And what is it that is said in verse number 17? If we look at the first two lines of verse 17, the word tad has been repeated or given four times. Tad buddhayas, tad atmanaha, tanishtas, and tat parayanaha. Thus, since these verses 13 to 21 are dealing with jnana yoga, when a person has gone through the proper study of the scriptures under the guidance of a right master, and one has attained the knowledge that Aham Atma Asmi, I am this consciousness which is in this temporary body. Thus, I am the witness and I am the consciousness in this body. When one has attained this level of knowledge and looks upon all the transactions in life, Krishna says here, that will happen when there is a total merger or alignment of all your equipments. What are the equipments? Tat buddhaya. When your buddhi is totally integrated with tat. Tat means that supreme consciousness. So the intellect has been tuned into that supreme consciousness. Tat buddhaya. And not only that, tat manas. Your mind also is soaked in devotion to that supreme consciousness. And not only that, tanishtas, nishta means one is very firm on this path of karma yoga and jnana yoga. Therefore, there is a total integration of the mind and the intellect. The goal is one, and that is to attain this supreme consciousness. And what is that goal? Tat parayanaha. Ayanaha means goal. Para means the most supreme goal, which is moksha. So that means when a person has totally integrated his whole life towards achieving that supreme goal, and what do we mean by this? To serve the self in all, when one has reached this level, to serve the self in all is karma action. That is called karma yoga. When you see that one self in every being and you serve that self, that is called karma yoga. To love the self in all is bhakti or devotion. When I see that self in everyone and I'm able to equally love everyone, that is called bhakti devotion. To behold the self in all, I see that same self in myself and in all creation, that is through jnanam. Therefore, when karma, bhakti and jnanam all three merge in that individual, Krishna says, gacchantya punaravritim. That person reaches a state of no return. State of no return here means what? What is the state of no return? Due to this inner transformation, there is a complete change in the outlook of life. They have burned the bridges to the past wrong way of thinking. And they have emerged out of their cocoon of their ignorance. That means you cannot go back to the way you were living. Your thoughts, your actions, your emotions, everything undergoes a drastic transformation. And that state of moksha is called Jivan Mukta. When one is alive and one is free from the shackles of birth, of the transactions of life, that is called Jivan Mukta. That is what he is saying here, reach that state of no return. And that is only possible when he says Jnana Nirduta Kalmasha. Kalmasha means when all the impurities in your mind, and what is the greatest impurity in our mind? What is the greatest impurity among all impurities? Ignorance is the greatest impurity. Ignorance of the real self who we are not this body, we are the Atman. That is the greatest ignorance, that is the greatest obstacle on the spiritual path. And this most highest ignorance or dirt, kalmasha, can only be removed through what? Jnana. Therefore he says, remove, when that person has removed that dirt called ignorance through the process of jnana, then one reaches a state of no return. Jnana, gacchantya punaravritim, a state of no return. Now, when a person has reached this state of no return, how does one look at life? How does one transact with life? And thus, in the next few verses, Krishna will also explain to us the state of a jnani and how he or she transacts with life. So, one thing we must remember, what is the result of this transformation that has been attained through this knowledge? We must realize that both the jnani, one who has undergone this transformation, and the agyani, who is the agyani? The ignorant person who does not believe or accept this knowledge and thus has not undergone this very transformation, both the jnani and the agyani will live in the same world. They will also face the same world. That there is no difference in the world that they face. The world remains the same. People will remain the same. And if the jnani can attain this state of anandam while facing the same world, what does it mean? The jnani and the agyani are facing the same world. But the jnani has attained a state of anandam. What does this mean? If the jnani can attain a state of anandam while facing the world, what does this mean?
It is possible to attain that
jnana. It is possible to attain that jnana. So what does it mean?
It It's inside us, it's not.
It is not, the problem is not in the world, the problem is in ourselves. Because both the Jnani and the Ajnani are facing the same world. One is living a turbulent life, the other is living a life of Anandam. The world is not changed, people don't change, objects don't change. The change has come from inside, the transformation. And therefore, how does one look at the world now? In order to understand this verse also, we must know the three laws of causation, which is given in the Upanishads. The three laws of causation, which the sages and saints have contemplated upon and tried to explain to us the cause and effect of this world. And what are the three laws of causation? Number one, every effect must have a cause. There cannot be an effect without a cause. Example, effect is tree. What is the cause?
Seed.
Effect is ornaments. What is the cause?
Gold.
So, the first thing is, effect is pots. What is the cause?
Clay.
There cannot exist any effect without a cause. Applying the same logic, world is an effect. What is the cause?
God
is the cause. If we look at everything that is an effect, we understand there is a cause. Similarly, the world is an effect. There has to be a cause. Whether you call it the Big Bang Theory, you call it God, you call it Brahman or whatever, there has to be a cause. Number one. Number two, effects are many. Like ornaments are many. Cause is only one. There is only one cause of all the ornaments, that is gold. Pots come in different sizes, shapes and color, the effects. The cause is only one, which is clay. Therefore, the world is the effect which comes in various sizes, shapes, colors, but the cause is only one, which is God, consciousness. Number three, when the effect is gone, what happens to the cause? When the ornaments are all melted, what happens to the gold? Gold still remains. When the pots are all destroyed, what happens to the clay?
Clay still remains.
When the world is destroyed, what remains? Only God remains. So these are known as the three laws of causation. We have to keep this clearly in mind. Now, when we see this wooden table, supposing there is a wooden table, we can clearly understand that there are two separate entities. One is the table and one is the wood. Right? We can clearly understand this. When you see gold ring, you understand that there is a ring and there is a gold. You can differentiate. But when we say there is this person, there is a body, and there is Atman, that's when we get confused, isn't it? We can clearly see everything in creation, there is a cause and effect. But when we see a human body, we say there is body and there is Atman, there are two separate entities, we are unable to see this difference. That's when the problem happens. But what is the reality? If there is a wooden table, can there be a table without wood? It's not possible. If there is a gold ring, can there be a ring without gold? Therefore, if there is a human creation, can there be a human creation without Atman or without God? That's the same principle we have to use to understand. Right? But a Jnani who has this knowledge, who believes in this knowledge, understands that there is body, there is also Atman. And body is temporary covering, whereas Atman is the eternal consciousness. And when we have this knowledge, as the Upanishads also explain to us, using the example of space, space is only one, but when you put up walls in space, in your house, you put up walls and then you say this is kitchen space, this is dining room space, this is bedroom space, but actually space is what? Only one space. Yet because we have put up walls, we divide the spaces into different categories. Similarly, the Atman in all is one, but because of the different covering, the walls of different shapes, sizes and color, we look at creation as individual. We don't see that oneness. So this knowledge has got to dawn on us. We have to understand that just like we understand everything in creation has got two components, even this body, mind, intellect is also endowed with this consciousness or Atman. And thus, when there is this vision, when we look at the world with a renewed vision, that's what Krishna is giving here in verse number 18. If you look at the last line, this change of perspective is not seeing the world through the physical eye. How are you looking at the world now? Because if you look at with your physical eye, you will only see different shapes, sizes, people of different colors and names and faces. So you are not to look at the world with the physical eye. How are you to understand the world? Through the spiritual eye or eye of knowledge, what we call the third eye. It is sometimes referred to as the third eye. It is the very eye of knowledge, how you are looking at the world. And what is that vision? Krishna says here in the last line of verse 18, Panditaha Samadarshina. Darshina means to vision, to see. Darshina, Sama, equanimity, have the equanimity of vision, how you look at the world. And such a person who has Samadarshina, sees only the one Atman or consciousness in the entire creation, such a person is called a Panditaha. So a Panditaha is not one who is identified by the clothes he wears, but by having that equal inner vision on the world. Such a person is called Panditaha. And what is the vision of this Panditaha? So Krishna now divides the world into various categories, from the highest category to the lowest category. And what is the highest category? He says, look back at verse 18, first line, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmane. That is the first type of individual in this world. Who is this individual? He is a Brahmana. And when we say that person is a Brahmana, that person must have two qualities. What are the qualities of a Brahmana? Here Krishna says, Vidya, he must have complete knowledge. And number two, he must have humility, devoid of pride. Vinaya means devoid of pride. So, a Brahmana has Vidya, complete knowledge, and at the same time he is Vinaya, he is devoid of pride, absence of pride, humility he has. Sampane means one who is endowed with. Therefore, to give anybody a title of Brahmana again, is to understand that that person must have knowledge and has humility. And why do we say that when this person is endowed with knowledge, knowledge is considered to be the real wealth. Among all the types of wealth that we can accumulate, knowledge is considered to be the real true wealth. Why is that? Knowledge is the only wealth that will take away your ignorance. Whereas all other types of wealth that you have will not take away this ignorance that you have. So no matter what material wealth that you have, money, possession, name, fame, etc., cannot buy, in fact, that wealth that you have cannot buy you knowledge. But wealth is the only thing that can buy you moksha. Knowledge which leads you to moksha. So wealth, knowledge of, wealth of knowledge is the only thing that can buy you moksha. Whereas all other wealth you have cannot buy you this, cannot purchase you moksha. You can purchase everything in creation except moksha. So that's why they say there are so many types of wealth you can have. You can give away dhanam, you can give away food, you can give money, you can give time, but the greatest thing you can give away is knowledge. Because that will give a person total freedom. And Brahmana is one such who is rich in knowledge. And what is the way, that's why when we express our humility, see, knowledge has got to go with humility. Otherwise, if knowledge is there, humility is not there, one can get very arrogant with his knowledge. And that is why in our culture, how do we express our humility? What is our expression of humility? Huh? Let somebody? We do? Namaskar. That is our expression of humility. I bow down to you, so I am ready to receive. I acknowledge you on a higher pedestal, isn't it? When we do namaskar, that is acknowledging our humility. That is the first type of individual here Krishna describes. What is the second? Gavi. Gavi means cow. Therefore, a Brahmana is being compared now to a cow. And cow in our tradition again is very much a respected animal. It is considered a sattvic animal. That's why we do also Gau Puja. Right? We do Gau Puja and we call cow as Gau Mata, mother cow. We give that much of respect to the cow because it is endowed with sattvic qualities also. The third aspect that Krishna is describing here is Hasti. Hasti means elephant, which again is very much respected in our tradition. As in the temples when you go, you will see various carvings of elephants. And also in festivals also, they also, worship elephant. And the very embodiment of elephant is who? Ganesha or Vinayaka, Lord Ganesha. So, also elephant, which actually has a tamasic nature. Right? Cow has a sattvic nature. Here elephant represents a tamasic nature. Then the fourth aspect here identified is Suni. Suni means dog. Therefore, if a cow has sattvic nature, elephant has tamasic nature, dog has rajasic nature. As we say, the animal runs around like a mad dog. Right? We say the person is running around like a mad dog, rajasic nature. And in our tradition, dogs are considered to be the lowest among all animals. I know dog lovers will not be happy when I say this, but it is in our tradition, right? But nowadays many people attach to their dog, so we don't want to upset them. And the other category the fifth category that Krishna is identifying here is Swapake. Swapake means the lowest of all creations, an uncultured person. Literally translated, it means dog eater. Dog eater.
Korean
sea dogs. And as it is also in our culture, meat eating is also not acceptable as it involves himsa or violence. Right? So especially on the spiritual path, meat eating is considered to be a tamasic karma, which promotes tamoguna also. And among meat eating people itself, the one who eats dog meat is considered to be the most lowest on the human scale. Yes. Yes.
So if we eat meat, we are increasing our tamasic level.
Nature. No, there are two ways. One is because of our tamasic nature, we are attracted to meat, number one. Number two, the more meat we consume enhances the tamasic nature again.
So more KFC.
So the what is sattvic food, rajasic food, tamasic food is explained clearly in chapter 17. There Krishna has given a breakdown of sattvic foods, rajasic foods, tamasic foods. By our nature, we are attracted to these type of foods, and more of these foods we consume, it also increases our very nature. Right? So sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic. Now we have five categories of creation here mentioned, from the very high, that is the brahmana, to the very low, that is the swapake or the dog eater. Now, are there differences in these five?
Yes.
How are they differences? You cannot see the gunas. Physically, there is a difference. Isn't there a difference?
Yes.
You can distinguish between a cow and a dog and a Brahmin and a dog eater, a very, very low type of person, uncultured person, and also by the nature of their thoughts, their nature, the way they express themselves, you can distinguish these five categories very easily through the sthula sharira and sukshma sharira. In the gross and mental makeup, there is a difference. But all these differences belong to what? Belong to the body, belong to the mind. So when you say a brahmana is a sattvic person and a dog eater is a tamasic person, these qualities belong to body or atma? They belong to the body, never to the atma. All the qualities, sattvic, tamasic qualities, belong to the body alone. Whereas atma is therefore said to be nirguna. Nirguna means devoid of all the gunas. That's why we call Brahman nirguna Brahman. Whereas all others, when we see a form of God, we call it Sarguna Brahman, because it has properties. That shape, that Lord that we worship, has got shape, has got size, has got color. That's why we call it Sarguna Brahman. It is with qualities, with attributes. Whereas the highest form of God is called Nirguna, because it is devoid of all the three gunas. It has no attributes, neither sattvic, nor rajasic, nor tamasic. That's what we have to understand. Devoid of any qualities. And this person who is endowed with the knowledge looks upon all these five in creation, how does he look upon?
As one.
As one. Equal vision. Samadarshina. You have a question? Samadarshina. Now, let us try to understand. If a Brahmin comes to your house, what do you do? You will touch his feet. You will make him sit on the sofa. You will give him nice food to eat on a thali. Right? You will sit at his feet and get knowledge from him. If a dog comes to your house, what would you do? Would you touch his feet? Would you do aarti for him?
Huh?
You will cuddle him. Maybe you will cuddle him.
So it's more than what you do for the...
Would you?
Huh? It's more than what you do for the Brahman.
But would you make him sit on the sofa? Would you... On the sofa also. That's why, you see, sometimes dog lovers are there. So how do we treat a cow? How we treat a dog? How we treat an elephant? And if a... very like swapake, meaning a very uncultured person comes to your house, would you give him that kind of respect which you give a Brahmin? No. So where is the Samadarshina? You treat all of them differently, but yet you say, I have equal vision. So how are we to understand this Samadarshina? He says here, Samadarshina, but yet we know it is not practical to treat a dog and a cow and an elephant and an uncultured person and a Brahmin all in the same way. You would deal very differently with each of them. So where is the Samadarshina?
When your mind disturbs,
means?
What?
Huh?
When we become aware.
You become aware, but yet you deal with them differently.
No, you have to get
yourself to recognize and deal in the same way.
How can you deal in the same way? There's no way. You cannot deal with a dog and a cow in the same way. You worship a cow in the temple, you won't take a dog in your temple and worship it.
Give him some food.
Right. So, where is this equal vision to understand this? Ramakrishna Paramahansa gives us a very simple and beautiful example when he says, look at the various parts of your body. Do you consider your hand to, do you love your hand more than your head? Do you love your head more than your feet? This is going to be a very difficult class. If your left hand hits you accidentally, would you get angry with your left hand? Right? Yet, if you were to eat your food, would you use your hand or your leg? Use your hand. If you were to pray, would you use your hand or your leg? Your hand. But does that mean that you give more importance to your hand or your leg? No. You love every part of your body as one, but you know how to deal with every individual part of your body for what it is used for. Right? So the transaction may be different, but your love is one for all. How you transact with the world will be different, but that does not mean that you place a brahmana higher up on the pedestal and a swapake, a dog eater, lower down on the pedestal. The love is one and the same. But in terms of transaction, you know how to deal with the world. So that is called samaha darshina. The interaction and the transaction will vary. At the transactional level, I know how to deal. But at the emotional level and the intellectual level, I look upon all as with one inner vision, with oneness. And that is what is called the state of Jivan Mukta, where you are able to deal with the world with that one equal vision. Now, the question always, and sister also asked the question just now, is it possible to attain this state of moksha while living or upon death? And Krishna gives us the answer in this very verse number 19. Because many people wonder that is moksha only possible when there is death of this body, then only moksha is possible? And there are philosophers who say moksha is only possible upon death. And therefore, what do they say? Upon death, you will travel to this particular place called Vaikuntha or either Vishnu Loka or Krishna Loka, and there is where you will get moksha. This is how most of us understand the concept of moksha. But here, what Krishna is saying, this moksha is possible right here and now. In fact, not only it is possible, if you don't attain the state of Jivan Mukta while living, you can never attain moksha upon death. You must understand this very clearly. You must attain Jivan Mukta. In fact, the very word Jivan means while you are alive. Attain the state of moksha where you have equanimity in vision, and this equanimity in vision can only be attained while you are living, not while you are dead, isn't it? So you have to attain it while living. Once you attain it while living, then that ultimate moksha, which is called Videha Mukti, is definitely possible. Yes?
Why, Jinnah, you said that philosophers say that only upon death you can reach moksha. Why do they say that?
Some of them claim, who don't have knowledge, but according to Vedanta says you have to attain it while living. Whereas some philosophers don't accept this, who don't believe in the concept of Vedanta, right?
Do they say how they know that only upon death they believe?
Everybody has their own theories. They say, that's why there are also people here who promise you moksha if you surrender to them, right? They say, surrender to me and I will guarantee you moksha, right? And I have also told you there are organizations here where you pay a fee and they can teach you how to tap your Kundalini and reach moksha. If you want to, there is. I was told they conduct every year annual camps. You pay 1,180 ringgit. Very cheap. Yeah, that's it. And not only that, if you bring another member, you get discount. Member get member discount. So there are people who say, come to me, the door to moksha is through me. But according to Vedanta, you can attain that level of moksha through jnana, knowledge, while living. So Krishna says here in this verse, iha eva. Iha means now, eva means here, right now, here itself, while living, moksha is possible. This state of moksha is possible. And possible for who? Tahi, tahi means for those, by those people, jitaha. Jitaha means one who has transcended. What have you transcended? Sarga, samsara, the duality of samsara. When you only see that oneness in all the creation, when you have transcended the state of duality, when you don't see duality in creation, that means you have attained that state of moksha while you are living. Iha eva. Right here, right now. Just like we understand, pots are many, clay is one, ornaments are of various types, but gold is one. We see the essence of one in everything. So one who has transcended this duality, how? Through knowledge. They are not affected by the changing nature of everything in the world, including their own body, because their vision has been transformed. And that's why Krishna says here, yesham manaha stitam samye. Yesham, those people, manaha, the mind, is stitam. Stitam means fully established in this vision of samye, in this vision of oneness. When the mind is totally, constantly established in this vision of samaha darshina. And Krishna says, what does one see? Samam nirdosham. He sees this oneness which is nirdosham, which is free from all defects. If there are defects in anybody, whatever defects they are, physically or mentally, if somebody is angry by nature or jealous by nature, these are all called defects, nirdosham. Where do all these defects occur? Where do they arise from? From body, from mind. Whereas this Brahman or this oneness, the vision that you see, is nirdosha. It is devoid of any defects. It is nothing but purity. That one consciousness which is known as purity, which is beyond any defects. So first of all, the vision of myself, I understand that I am the Atman, and then you see that same vision in everything in creation. Tasmat, Krishna says, therefore, tasmat, brahmani te stitaha. These are realized souls. Such realized souls are said to be constantly established in this vision. So, jnana yoga is nothing but the process of discovering my real and higher nature. That is the path of jnana yoga. And this stage of jnana yoga discovery goes through two stages. The first stage is, realize I am not the body, mind, intellect. But I am the consciousness which is pervading the body, mind, intellect. Which is different from the body, mind, intellect. So there are two components we must realize within ourselves. Through how? Through jnana. Second understanding is, I, the consciousness pervading this body, is the same consciousness that is pervading everywhere. Right? That is the realization that we have to come to. So having discovered this pure consciousness, the wise people are not obsessed with this incidental, superficial, mortal, changing nature of the world. They are able to accept all the changes that are happening to the body and to creation also. Whatever is happening, the changes are all external. Okay. So, this verse now, number 20 now, Krishna says, upon gaining this knowledge, a jnani who attains this knowledge continues to live in this world and has this oneness of vision, right? And who understands that everything that we are going through life, we must understand, is governed by three factors, which is what the scriptures tell us. All of us who are going through life, our lives are governed by three forces. And what are the three forces? One is known as desa. Desha means the environment that is around you, the people who are around you, right? The type of environment also will govern our life also. That is one. The second factor is called kala or time. Time also will govern our life. Our very body is subject to changes in time. So we must understand, everybody else also is undergoing changes subject to time. Nobody can escape this onslaught of time also. That is the second component that affects our life also. And the third is called prarabdha, the karmas which we carry forward from our past actions. Therefore, desa, kala, prarabdha will affect everybody's life, will have an impact on everybody's life. And whether you like it or not, it will all these three factors will affect us. And then the thing is, even if desa and kala are same, let's assume that if you take two people who are living in the same environment, same family situation, and are born at the same time, but if prarabdha is different for two people, they are placed, the environment might be the same, they might be born at the same time, whereas prarabdha is the difference into one person's life and another person's life. So whether you are a jnani, again, or whether you are an ajnani, both of these people have got to go through the influence of desa, kala, prarabdha. Therefore, favorable and unfavorable conditions are caused by desa, kala, prarabdha. Yes.
I just, if you are on the topic of prarabdha karma,
right.
Just a small question. You know, mothers who have given birth to twins, so does that mean both the twins have like the same prarabdha karma? That's why they are in the same environment and born at the same time?
The birth is determined by the prarabdha. So where you take birth, to what parents, what environment is determined by prarabdha. However, although both the twins are born again in the same environment, again there is a question of self-effort. So both the twins can turn out to be different also. Right? Although they have taken birth in the same environment at the same time. But by their self-effort, one can become different than the other also. Okay. So now, we understand that both the jnani and the ajnani will go through these three conditions of desa, kala, prarabdha, favorable and unfavorable conditions. Now, the question here is, what is the advantage of gaining knowledge? I thought, after I go through the whole Bhagavad Gita, then I am not subject to desa, kala, prarabdha. Then you say, after 5 chapters, now only you tell me why you waste my time coming from Gita classes. If desa, kala, prarabdha are going to affect the jnani and the ajnani, then what is the benefit of this knowledge?
It's the way they handle.
The difference is, you're right, is in the response to the situation. That is the difference which knowledge will give us. Not the situation will change, but the response to the situation. Jnanam does not change the situation. Jnanam gives you the inner strength to have a balanced response towards both ups and downs of life. That is what we call samatvam. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 itself, Krishna introduced this concept called samatvam. Equip yourself with this knowledge to gain the inner strength to determine your response to the external situations. And here in verse number 20, Krishna explains this when he says, Priyam Prapya. Prapya means attaining Priyam. Priyam here means favorable situation. When your prarabdha is fine, when everything is going perfect in your life, that is called Priyam Prapya. All the favorable conditions are there. Everybody loves you. Everybody adores you. Your birthday comes, everybody buys you gifts. Right? Everything is going very favorable. Why is it going favorable? Prarabdha karmas. Because of prarabdha karmas, good prarabdha karmas, they are giving you such wonderful experiences. But what is the attitude of the jnani? Does not get buddhi does not get carried away by these favorable experiences. Understands it is due to cause and effect. Everything experience has got a cause and effect. If I am going through a favorable experience, it is due to my prarabdha karma. So you enjoy the experience. It doesn't mean you don't enjoy. You enjoy, but you don't get carried away. And everything which arrives will also go away. So enjoy the experience, but don't get carried away. You don't reject them. Now, here what he means is go through the experience, but don't get addicted to that. Now, what is the difference going through the experience and being addicted to the experience? When I am addicted to the experience, what happens? I am not prepared to lose that experience, isn't it? You hold on to that experience. You are not prepared to lose it. And what happens when the experience is gone? Because everything comes as to go. Then what happens?
Frustration,
anger, disappointment, all this occur. So enjoy the experience, but don't hold on to the experience. And jnani is one who can go through the experience, enjoy it, and then let it go. Understanding that it is my prarabdha karmas, because of that I am enjoying all favorable experiences. So here he says, na prahishyet. Prahishyet means, while going through favorable experience, does not get carried away. Rejoice and let go. And also, when we get attached to favorable experiences, what happens? When unfavorable experiences happen, you fall into depression or dejection. Because we are attached to the favorable experience. Now imagine, sometimes we go to a temple, we hear beautiful bhajan. The person sings a beautiful bhajan. And you are so mesmerized by the bhajan, you keep on thinking about it for days and days. Then you go to another temple and that person also sings a bhajan. Then what do? It's a beautiful bhajan also, but you say, no, he is not singing as good as that fellow. That one was more enjoyable. Actually, this bhajan also is enjoyable. But why you don't enjoy it? Because you compare it to the previous experience. Every experience, you keep hanging on to that previous experience and keep on comparing. So what is the lesson? Enjoy the experience, let it go. And why? Because then your mind is ready for another new experience. And you enjoy that experience. So do not get attached, do not get addicted. Enjoy that experience, let it go. Therefore your mind is ready now for another new experience. Favorable experience. And the same happens when we go for holiday or when we meet somebody we like. Then we meet somebody else, we say, yes, that fellow is nicer, more nicer than this fellow. Actually, he is nice also. But you compare him to another person also. And thus what happens? You yourself are not enjoying that experience. You are holding on to the previous favorable experience. And when an unfavorable experience comes along, it disturbs you even more. Because you are addicted to that earlier experience. And extending this same idea, Krishna says, one is Priyam Prapya. Now if you look at the second line, A Priyam Prapya. Sometimes unfavorable situations also come in our life. We cannot help it. And what is the response to unfavorable situation? Udvijay. Udvijay means a jnani does not get dejected, does not get carried away by favorable, does not go into dejection, depression because of unfavorable situation. That is what we call maintaining the right mental balance during favorable and unfavorable. Mastery of the mind. And we have many stories which are told to us in the scriptures also, that especially the story of Lord Rama, when one day he was called by his father, King Dasharatha, and he was told, "I have good news for you. Tomorrow you will be crowned the king of Ayodhya." And then few hours later he calls Rama again and he says, "I have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is you won't be crowned the king of Ayodhya. The good news is you will have 14 years holiday in the forest." And who was the one who was most affected by this decision? Who was most impacted by this decision?
Rama himself.
Rama himself, isn't it? Today you are told you are being the king. Tomorrow you are told no, you are to go exile into the forest, right? No, when I say affected means personally, who did that decision affect? It affected Rama, right? Affect means not emotionally affect, but that decision had an impact on him. But who was the least affected by it?
Rama.
And who was the most affected by it? Everybody else who had nothing to do with that decision. Isn't it? Everybody was upset. The whole kingdom was upset. All the brothers were upset. Everybody was upset. But how did Rama look upon it? When he was told that he's going into exile? What did he say? How did he look upon that decision of his father that he was going into exile for 14 years? The victim was Rama, but what did he say? He said, "How fortunate I am that for the next 14 years I can visit all the ashrams of all the saints and sages who are staying in the forest. And what a great opportunity I have been given to serve them and to gain knowledge at their feet." You see, the same episode which would be looked upon by anybody as a disaster, he looked upon it as a learning experience. He knew that there were so many sages and saints, there were so many ashrams in the forest, and he said, "I will have a great opportunity to serve these saints and gain knowledge by sitting at their feet." So the one who was a victim was Rama. But the one who was the least affected was Lord Rama. He had a totally different outlook, Samaha Darshini. And Rama also in this episode, when he is told that he is going to exile, he also speaks about the power of Prarabdha Karma. He mentions this in the Ramayana. Valmiki writes very extensively that Lord Rama then talks about Prarabdha Karma. He understands what I am going through, this unfavorable situation, is nothing but Prarabdha. So he says that, yes, sorry.
I have a question about Rama. The king had passed away because his son had left. He was cursed by the two blind parents, right?
He was cursed by who?
The two blind. The king accidentally shot someone. He thought it was a deer in the forest.
Yes, wasn't that Mahabharata? The one that he shot in the forest. Was this Ramayana?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not in Ramayana.
No, I think, I'm not sure. Okay, you carry on your question.
But I saw in the movie that Rama's father
shot a deer.
No, he thought it was a deer, but okay. It was someone who was giving water for their two blind parents.
Ah, okay, sages. Okay. The two sages. In fact, yeah, that was, I thought it was in Mahabharata. Okay, carry on.
And then one of them put a curse on the king saying that because you have killed my son, you shall also die in the same way.
You should lose your son and die in the same way also. Right.
So when the king died, when the king died because Rama had gone in exile and couldn't take it and all that, did that mean that he was attached to Rama?
Yes, of course. Definitely. Because of the very attachment. And look at it. The ironic part of it is the king could not have children. Right? All his three wives, he could not have children. And he did so much of tapas, so much of prayers to acquire the children to give him happiness, and in then what happened? That son ended up giving him the most misery also. Right? So look at the irony of it. We want something which we think will give us happiness, but that very thing, when we attain, God answers our prayers, and that very thing ends up giving us misery.
But in a way, wasn't he like attached to God? Because Rama was like a reincarnation of Vishnu.
Right.
So was it like, can you interpret it in a way where he was attached to God?
Did he see Rama as God?
No, but he did not, he did not see Rama as God, He looked upon him with that attachment as a father to a son. That was the relationship. And that's why even the brothers also got so emotionally carried away when they realized that he is going into exile also. Right? And the mothers also, all the, except the one, the stepmother who sent him off into exile. So prarabdha karma, whatever it is, can affect us. But the thing is, if the situation can be changed, you must understand, prarabdha karma does not mean that we accept it with defeat. Prarabdha karma happens, but if the situation can be changed, you put in effort to change the situation. Because don't forget, we also have free will also. We can apply that. And when the situation cannot be changed, then you also put in effort for what? To change your attitude. So if the situation can be changed, you put in effort to change in the situation. If the situation cannot be changed, you also put in effort to change your attitude. Whatever it is, you have to still put in your effort. Either way, change the situation or change your attitude. There are only two choices here. Change the situation or change the attitude.
Situation, you have no power to change.
Sorry?
Can you change the situation?
If you can, what I'm saying, if you can change the situation, change the situation. Right? Or if you find that you cannot change the situation, then the next option is change your attitude. Right? But getting rejected, getting angry cannot improve or change the situation. So Jnanam gives us the inner strength to face the situation. And a very common example is, all of us face every day, traffic jam, isn't it? What is the problem in a traffic jam? At that moment, when you are sitting in the traffic jam, why do you get agitated? Why do you get agitated?
Expectation.
Expectation of what?
We expect that guy should follow the IV code, he doesn't follow.
No, you are a traffic jam. Nobody get home. Why you get so upset? So, what you are thinking is the place where you should be rather than the place where you are, isn't it?
Yes.
Right? I should be at home, or I should be at the office, or I should be here. So, you have pushed yourself to be imagining that you are somewhere else rather than sitting here in the traffic jam.
Yeah.
So, what do you do? Can you change the situation? So, what should you do? Enjoy the moment. Don't think of where you should be. Understand, enjoy where you are, enjoy the present, enjoy the situation, sing a bhajan, recite some mantras, put some tape in your car, some CD, whatever, enjoy. Be in the present. The problem with all of us is we are not in the present, but we are projecting ourselves to be somewhere else. I should be there, I should be here. No, tell yourself, I should be in this traffic jam. And enjoy. Because what? You cannot change the situation. So what is the next option? Change your attitude. To accept. I am in the traffic jam. Enjoy. Right?
Some of them change the situation by, that's when they cut lanes.
Exactly. So, and they get agitated. They get agitated. And end up other people getting more agitated. Isn't it?
Yeah. But at the same time, you say that, don't think of where you should be. But say you're going for a very important meeting.
Right.
And you need to be there at 8 o'clock.
Right.
And that jam, you know that you're not even going to reach there at 8:30.
Right.
It puts a lot of pressure because because of your delay, the meeting cannot take place,
right,
or something important cannot be signed in that.
Right.
So there's a lot of other issues involved.
True, true.
So don't you think that it's not totally possible to get detached from that?
Can you change the situation?
You can't change, but...
And by being agitated, by being angry, by being upset, are you helping the situation?
No, you don't get agitated.
No.
You know you can't change.
Right.
So that's where you get a little tacky and you break the little bit where you also try to cut lanes, which you don't normally do.
Right.
So on that place, of course, you know that you're doing it wrong.
Right.
But you need to do it because otherwise there's a lot of repercussions.
Right.
So, is that okay to do where
No, but when you say you get tacky, what do you mean by tacky?
Where you feel that, okay, this, you're caught there.
Right.
But if you can do like what one or two chaps will do where
right.
can, you know that's wrong.
Right.
But you need desperately
okay.
to get that day.
So, if you do it without getting agitated, what are you doing?
That's
you are changing the situation.
You change the situation.
So,
but
if you can change the situation,
yes.
change the situation.
Yes.
But if you still cannot find a way to cut down, then what do you do?
That's fine, then you take it. But in that way, that because you are trying to cut, and so you are going to cause agitated to some
Correct.
Somebody else.
Yeah.
But you are not agitated.
You are not agitated.
So is that fine?
Yeah, no problem.
No,
hang on. Let us say.
No, because you are not getting agitated.
Sorry?
Leave early. Use
weight. Ah, yeah, yeah, of course.
Get whatever.
Yeah.
I find a lot of people will say, oh, but I'm in a hurry, you know.
Correct.
I don't think that...
No, the reason is very simple. Because everybody always leaves at the last minute. If my appointment is 1 hour away, I leave 15 minutes before the appointment,
yeah,
isn't
yeah.
it? Nobody leaves 1 hour and says, I'll reach there 15 minutes earlier.
Right?
Nobody does that.
But as you are saying, in circumstances which are inevitable, when you didn't expect there was an accident
correct,
or something,
correct. Yes.
And you sort of, you know, your conscience pricks you that you're not supposed to do that.
But you do it.
But you feel out of desperate means you do it. In that process, you feel bad, you upset somebody else
right.
because you do that. You feel bad, but you do it. But, so there is this
So the thing is like this now. You either change the situation or you change yourself. Change your attitude or change the situation. If you change the situation and take a shortcut and maybe you get stopped by the police, then you take the blame for it, isn't it? What I'm saying, there is only two possibilities. Either you change the situation or you change. Whether you do something wrong, that's a separate matter again. That you agitate somebody or you break a law, you pass a, you go through a red traffic light, you pay the price for it, right? So, you have a choice. That's what I'm trying to say. You have a choice. Either you change the situation or change your attitude. But do not get agitated, do not get angry, do not get frustrated because that is not going to help the situation at all. So here of course Krishna is looking at it at a higher level. That person who can face and not get carried away by favorable situation and who doesn't get dejected in unfavorable situation because of what? Here Krishna says, Brahmavid. Brahmavid means Vidh means knowledge, Brahma means that supreme consciousness. When one becomes a knower of Brahman, when one knows, has this knowledge and understands that I am this Atman who has discovered this inner strength. Now, but understand one thing, knowledge alone, here it says knowledge of Brahman, knowledge alone is not enough. Knowledge must become a conviction. This is our problem. It is not that we don't have knowledge of Brahman. It is not that we don't have knowledge of Atman. The problem is, it is not a conviction. For example, many people or everybody knows about the law of karma. All of you know, right? And what is your attitude about law of karma? When you know about the law of karma, every action has a equal reaction. When you know this, what do you say?
No.
You say, what a wonderful law, isn't it? What a just and wonderful law. Every action has an equal reaction. If I do good, I get good. If I do bad, I get bad. Isn't it a wonderful law? Beautiful law, right? So when everything good is happening to you, It's okay. The minute something wrong, unfavorable happens to you, what do you say? Why me? God, why me? So it is not that we do not know the law of karma. But what is the problem? It is not a conviction. The acceptance is not there. The knowledge is there. The conviction is not there. If the conviction is there, the question will never arise, why me? You will never ask why me. If you have conviction of the law of karma, you accept, I get what I deserve. If I am facing an unfavorable situation, it is because of my prarabdha, and I have two choices. What are the choices? Change the situation or change the attitude. Right? So self-knowledge must be turned into a conviction. How we turn into a conviction? That is going to explain also. So here he says, sthira buddhir. The buddhi or the intellect must be firmly established, unwavering, unshaken. On this, that who am I? I am the consciousness. I am the eternal Atma. If I am not convinced, what should I do?
Get more knowledge.
Study some more. Study further some more. If you are not convinced, you still not convinced, what to do? Question some more, study some more. How long should I study? Till I am convinced. If I am not convinced in this birth, what should I do? Come back again next birth, no problem. Can do in installments also, don't worry. There are many births to go. But conviction is a must. So I should be convinced about law of karma. I should be convinced about this knowledge also. And just like the law of karma, any experience appears to be unfair or unjust. Why does the experience appear to us to be unfair or unjust? If I am going through a lot of unfavorable circumstances, it appears to be unjust or unfavorable because of what? I am not aware of all my total actions of this life, left alone even the past life also. We do not know what we have done over the past life. So when we are going through certain unfavorable experience, we call them as unjust or unfavorable. But look at the lives of even the great saints and sages. Nobody escaped from unfavorable situations. Each and every one. Ramakrishna Paramahansa, Ramana Maharishi, even the great saints, the gurus of the Sikhism, they suffered tremendously under the hands of the invaders. Even their children suffered also. So the question is, prarabdha will affect us in any way. So therefore here he says, inner strength is very important. How do I gain inner strength? Brahmavid bhavati. That's what he says. Be a knower of Brahman. Brahmavid. How do I get this knowledge? First, at the first stage, how do I become a Brahmavid? Gain this knowledge how? Through what process? What you are doing now? Shravanam. Through listening, I become a Brahmavid. I get knowledge. Knowledge of Brahman. Knowledge of Atman. So first of all, he says, you have to become a Brahmavid. Then how do I make sure this knowledge becomes a conviction? Mananam. Mananam is what here? Is described as sthira buddhir. Just give me 2 more minutes, I'll finish. Sthira buddhir means, after you have listened and heard this knowledge, it must become a conviction. The only way the knowledge can become a conviction is through mananam. Until sthira buddhir, your intellect is firm, convinced. Sthira buddhir through mananam. So, knowledge you get through shravanam, conviction through mananam, raising questions. And keep on raising questions as long as this is not become a conviction in you. And then, when it becomes a conviction, then Krishna says, you become asammudaha. Asammudaha means one who has no delusions. One who is very clear about this knowledge. Who constantly keeps this teachings in their mind daily. So therefore the 3 stages to go through, sravanam, become a Brahmavid, get knowledge. Through mananam, become sthira buddhir, eliminate all your doubts. Then through nididhyasanam you become asammudaha. You are rid of these habitual negative tendencies. And when that happens, what happens? He says, na prihishe prem prapya, na udvijet apriyam prapya. Ups and downs of life are incapable of shaking a person. When this knowledge becomes a conviction, such a person is called a jivan mukta. So up to this, Krishna will end. There's one more verse, 21, which we will complete next week, where he will complete the discussion about Jnana Yoga, and then he will summarize in the final verses, and then introduce to us the topic of meditation. Okay, so we'll stop here and resume next week. End with a prayer.
Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru.
Thank you for your